I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Today, we're going to talk about what most of us watched last night or heard last night on the radio, whichever way you did it. Of course, that was the town meeting, which in some people's minds wasn't, at least my mind, was not a real town meeting so much as it was a good set-up discussion, but a town meeting is much more of a free-for-all than that, but it was a town meeting. It took place last night in Nashville, Tennessee, between Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain. And we are going to discuss that, debate it, think about it, hear your thoughts on this election, where it is, what you think of these campaigns so far, what you think about what the candidates are saying, where our country is going. Join us here at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. One of our guests this hour is Kevin Dayhoff, who's the former mayor of Westminster, Maryland, and a blogger. You can read his stuff at kevindayhoff.net. That's Kevin, KevinDayhoff.net, if you want to look at what he's saying now as we speak. We're also joined by a familiar voice to many of you here who listen to WEAA, Faraji Muhammad, who is host of Listen Up Baltimore, which airs right here on WEAA Friday nights at 7 p.m. and is founder and president of the New Light Leadership Coalition. And Kevin and Faraji, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
Good to have you both here. So last night, there we go. I can turn my headphones a little bit. Now I can hear. Sometimes you get old, you can't hear it. I can hear now. So 410-319-8888. And so let's talk about last night and what we saw and what we thought.
It's going to be really interesting if we can figure out anything to talk about last night. I mean,
why?
It was two parts watching paint dry and one part root canal. It covered very little in the way of new territory.
Right.
And the format was skewed in that they didn't facilitate asking follow-up questions. And I just didn't really see a lot of new ground covered last night. I think Senator Obama left the debate pretty much in the same position in which he entered the debate, with 9 points ahead in the national polls, ahead in the battleground states, with the wind at his back, and sailing for 27 days from now.
And let me, I might add before we turn to Faraji Muhammad, that Kevin Dayhoff was the Republican mayor of Westminster. Faraji.
I have to agree with Kevin. I think that last night it really wasn't, quote unquote, a game changer for Senator McCain. I think that what we saw last night is he definitely had to kind of he had to show where he stood. And I think that what's been happening with these debates over the past few weeks, whether it's been the presidential or even the vice presidential debate, is the fact that Joe Biden and Senator Barack Obama, they both have been explaining specifics. And I think that more people are calling for specifics from McCain and Palin. Now, McCain had an awesome task last night because of the fact that Palin was had her debate. However, she didn't necessarily move the conversation forward or strengthen the argument for the Republican administration. So I think that he had to do that as well as reintroduce himself to the American people, considering this week there was a lot of mudslinging. So he had to really do something different. And I don't know, just from my vantage point, I don't think he made a strong enough case for his candidacy.
I think with the debate last night, I think technically perhaps McCain won on points. However,
what does that mean?
Well, if you look at it was sort of a bifurcated debate. The first part was on the economy, in which I felt that Senator McCain did quite well, and interestingly enough, he did quite well as compared to how it is that he's addressed the issues in the past number of weeks on the economy. The second part, of course, was foreign policy. It's almost as if they reversed roles from the first debate. On the first debate, Obama did extraordinarily well on the economy, and McCain did well on foreign policy. And then it seemed a flip-flop last night. But the challenge for McCain last night was to define what it is that his campaign and is going to, what momentum he can bring about for the final 27 days. And I'm just not sure that it was a game changer last night at all.
I was thinking about there's a tenor of something I feel going on in some ways, and then maybe you two can agree or disagree about this and, mm-hmm. and throw it out here. In this campaign in general right now, it seems that there seems to be a shift. I had breakfast this morning at a place I frequent, and the waitresses there were really lovely people, and they're all, most of them are white. And one of them I knew has a really nice guy as her husband, but didn't want to vote for a black man for president.
Hmm.
Working class guy. But that's all shifted. And what was said to me is that we want to vote for hope, and we're ready to vote, and we're voting for Obama. So I had to step back and say, whoa, there's something going on here. That on one side, and on the other, with the kinds of attacks that are coming from both Senator McCain and Governor Palin, but mostly from Governor Palin. I mean, more ferocious right. from Governor Palin, mm-hmm. that are very personal and kind of vicious kind of attacks on Barack Obama, which I think may be backfiring. I just wonder if there's a juxtaposition here of those things for either one of you.
Well, and
Kevin Dayhoff, then go to Faraji, then we'll get to the phone.
Well, screen. And the interesting thing is that Governor Palin is the real deal. She's extraordinarily intelligent. She knows the issue. She has a great deal of experience. And yet, I don't believe that insults at the 11th hour of the game at this point in time is really what's going to carry the day. Folks are voting for Barack Obama, not for his record or not for what he has done in the past. They're voting for Barack Obama for what he represents that he can do for folks in the future. And bringing up past associations or what his pastor said a number of years ago, I just don't believe is a real good approach. I think what it is that Governor Palin and Senator McCain need to do is define what it is they're going to do for the key and critical issues that are facing the American public, and that's the economy, that's health care, which is a wreck, that is energy independence, mm-hmm. and how it is that we're going to continue to protect and maintain our national security.
Mm. Well, you know, from last night, the conversation shifted, I think, Mark, simply because people are starting to see that when it comes down to the economy, it's very hard for people to place trust back into an administration that has been over or presiding over the economics of this country for the past 8 years under President Bush. Out of the 12 years, the Republicans had control for 10 of those 12 years. So people are starting to rethink now and say, well, you know, should we really put another Republican back into office considering what has already happened over the past time? Then Senator Obama did something, I think, that in the midst of this fight is the fact that he connected John McCain back to Keating. To Charles Keating and to the Keating Five. And I think that now people are really starting to rethink and reevaluate how sincere that Senator McCain is in this whole process.
But was that really a wise move to attempt to associate Senator John McCain with the Keating Five?
But he was part of the Keating Five. I mean, it's
well,
not like it was a lie.
But no, he was completely exonerated from that. As a matter of fact, there were Democrats at the time who said that he did not belong to be associated with the Keating Five at the time. He also took personal ownership of his involvement with the gentleman Keating, and said that it was a mistake on his part at that time. I don't think it's relevant. I don't think it works. I don't think it works any more than attempting to associate Senator Obama with Bill Ayers or Rezko, or any of those folks from back then.
That's exactly what Governor Palin is doing right now. She's raising Bill Ayers.
I don't understand that approach. I can't defend that approach because I don't necessarily feel that that's a smart approach at this time in the 11th hour of the campaign.
And I think that what Governor Palin is currently doing right now is, I mean, she's really isolated herself. I mean, she is not the candidate that I think a lot of people were expecting, especially women voters were expecting, that she was going to speak on the behalf of their issues, going to speak on the behalf of what role that women would play in the new administration. She's not showing that. She's coming out, and they are positioning her as an attack dog for the Republican Party. And I don't think that's the best move if she's really trying to make inroads with the American people and the progression here that's taking place in America.
Well, especially at a time when the cynicism of the American public, when the level of distrust that government can do anything efficiently or effectively or with any competence whatsoever is at an historic low. We must remember that even though President Bush has one of the lowest historic approval ratings,
26%?
Congress is lower. Congress is much more lower than that. And I think what it is that the American public is looking for change. They're looking for new leadership. They're looking for
fresh ideas.
It sounds
like you're almost saying we've given up and Obama's going to win.
No. I think that there, if McCain, Senator McCain and Governor Palin adjust their approach with the final 27 days, I think that there is still a good opportunity for them to win. But as we were talking earlier in the green room, no matter who wins, what is it that they're going to win? An extraordinarily polarized nation with two foreign ground wars, an economy that's a mess, healthcare is a total train wreck, with an energy policy in which we're giving $700 billion a year overseas to people who don't like us.
And I agree with you, but see, and I guess this is where, and this is why I think that Senator Barack Obama's message in the DNC was so important, because he said that this is not about me, this is about you. And I think that this is at the point where the American people have to decide whether we're going to continue to just put all of our faith in the politician, or are we going to start to do some things on our own? I mean, I'm a strong advocate, of course, for community organizing, for doing something for self. But that's the question that's going to have to be asked. We at this point, it's going to really going to have the American people will have to take a proactive effort in being involved in governmental affairs, because we're finding out that the government at this point can't handle everything by itself because of the interest, because of the corruption, because of the culture that's pervasive in government. We have to do, the American people is going to have to start getting involved more.
We're talking with Faraji Muhammad and Kevin Dayhoff about the debate last night and this election ahead of us. On November 4th is the day that we pull our levers and push the buttons. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Or write to us here at Steiner Show @gmail.com. And let us go to the phones. 410-319-8888 in a minute. And play some clips for you from last night's debate as we kind of look at what's going on in this election and why the tide seems to be shifting towards Obama. Some people say that the tide needs to be larger if Obama wants to win, given the racial factor in the vote, that how white Americans vote once they get into the booth, whether they vote for Obama or not, is a big piece of this puzzle that people do not know.
And actually, I don't think it is. I think it's a wash. I think it's a wash. I think a lot of the discussion about the race of the presidential candidate on the Democratic side is old, tired media rhetoric, which is just not necessarily that relevant these days. It very well may be relevant for a small portion of the population. But I just don't think it is. For what small portion it is, it's countered by the fact that there is a segment of the population that is going to vote for him strictly because of his race.
I don't know if either one of you studied or looked at, Faraji, the AP Yahoo poll.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Read that very carefully.
Well, you know, AP told me the sun was coming up tomorrow, I'd pack a flashlight by my bed.
Media bashing doesn't answer the question here, Kevin. I mean, the AP Yahoo poll was done by real scientists, real thinkers, social thinkers from universities for AP Yahoo. And it showed a very complex, I think, Faraji, question about race in America. And it's not very clear. I think it's a very murky world.
Right. And what that poll did, they surveyed over 2,000 adults here in America, cross-section, diverse. And in that poll, they looked at they asked the question of what type of characteristics or qualities, and they put up a list of negative qualities, and they found that at about 45% of white Americans could attribute negative qualities to their view or perception of black people here in America. And I think that that's paramount in the conversation, because as we're looking and everybody is saying, well, this is a colorblind society, we're not colorblind yet. Culturally, I believe we're moving closer. However, we still have yet to really get into the understanding of, okay, let's look at where this whole process is.
Well, we have a lot of people calling in. Let's go to some of our listeners, and we're going to play some clips on healthcare, environment, energy, and taxes.
You're going to put us to sleep with the clips.
I don't think so. I didn't fall asleep. I was not thrilled with the debate last night, but I didn't fall asleep. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this election as we talk with Kevin Dayhoff and Faraji Muhammad. And who's been holding on the longest here is Jerry and Owings Mills. You're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Jerry.
Let me say, as you know, I have been a very extreme supporter through many years of John McCain. I've lost virtually all confidence in his ability to lead the nation. And last night, in the longest Hail Mary ever tossed in a presidential campaign in my memory, he proposed that the United States government will buy up every bad, as he the words he used, mortgage, and renegotiate it. That is, if you look at the right-wing Republican blogs today, there's universal criticism of his seriousness and to some extent his stability as a politician. And I think it's the most desperate move he could have made. And I had the horrible thought he decided to say that when this fellow early in the debate asked him about the middle class, a word he's carefully avoided using. I think, except for one factor, the race is really over. It's been decided.
What's that factor?
And the unknown is what you were talking about, and I sense the same mood among people, white people, that you do. And what has happened, and it is horrifying, these people, I live in a middle-class retirement community. Mm. People are elderly people. Mm-hmm. And they're enormously concerned about running out of resources. Mm-hmm. And they are not going to waste 1 minute of their time worrying about someone's history 30, 35 years ago, usually a distorted history. Mm-hmm. They're worried about whether they're going to make it. And that certainly applies to people with jobs and with houses that are declining in value. And this proposal, this Hail Mary play by McCain, which no one knows how it'll be implemented, and he's very short on details, I think it shows his desperation. And as I say, we'll find out whether enough American people are willing to abandon whatever remnants of racism there is. And I think they are. In fact, I think that 9-point lead he currently has in the poll is likely to stay just where it is now, to correspond with the 22% popularity of Bush, the lowest in the history of the American people. We are in a desperate crisis by not Republican principles. And no one says this. This man, Bush, is the most incompetent, insensitive, uncreative guy who has ever run affairs, and the natural heritage of leadership, it will not go to someone as erratic as McCain.
Jerry, good to hear from you. Glad you're listening in. Take care. Now, before we go to Gabrielle, our next caller, I think that what might happen, despite what I said earlier, is that the economy and economics, people's fear of the future, trumps race. And that often happens in society. And I think that's what's going to happen in this. It could very well happen in this election.
Well, I think there's no doubt that as a society, as a country, we have more room to grow as far as becoming a totally colorblind society. But one thing that's being overlooked is the degree of misogynist attitudes and approaches towards Hillary Clinton. A lot of the negative tenor of this campaign began with an extraordinarily contentious campaign between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama quite some time ago. That set the tone for it. And many of us were pretty horrified to those of us who weren't necessarily enamored with the candidacy of Hillary Clinton. We were pretty horrified at how it is that she was treated. And certainly since Governor Palin was nominated to be the vice presidential candidate, the treatment that she's received has been absolutely horrific. There are a number of folks in the nation who are not going to vote for a woman candidate, whether she be the vice presidential candidate or the presidential candidate, and I would suggest that perhaps those numbers are just as great as the recalcitrant folks who are not going to vote for Senator Obama.
Well, Faraji, then we'll go back to the phone.
Well, you know, I have to disagree, just simply because I think that with Governor Palin and Hillary Clinton, it seems like there's two worlds apart. With Governor Palin, people are looking at her about it, and I know some folks want to get mad, but the fact of competency. And it's not even just experience. It's just about competency, her knowledgeable, how knowledgeable she really is, and the fact that if she's able to really open up, because she sits right now, she still has this narrow view of the American people. I mean, when you're talking to the American people, you have 70 million people watching you on the television, and you only go for hockey moms and Joe Sixpack. How many people are left outside of those two categories? And that's the question. She has yet to show that she's able to be inclusive of all of the great people that make up this country, and to really speak on their behalf, to really show that she is one for their interest.
Let me try to go back to the phones here. So our listeners think at 410-319-8888 as we look at this election and the debate last night. Gabrielle in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hi, Gabrielle.
You know, in watching what has been going on with the debates themselves, I'm concerned over what is happening in the media with them. They seem to be, like, I watched several different media outlets last night. They set up these arenas with undecided voters, and they ask them afterwards, did this debate adjust your vote? And I worry that they're still undecided voters, but these people need to vote on issues, and it doesn't look like that is what's happening. Mm. It seems that undecided voters are relying on these debates for their decisions on who they're voting for. These guys have 90 seconds to lay out a policy or a plan, and that's not possible. And these voters, they need to go on websites, they need to read papers, they need to inform themselves. To be at this point in this election process and to not know the issues and where these candidates stand is ridiculous to me. And I think that, you know, there was a comment made earlier where they said, one of you gentlemen said that, you know, if McCain changes his tactics, that he may still have a shot. And to me, that feeds into the notion that people are unaware of what issues are important to them. And if you read and you look into that, you're going to see what fits into your life, where you want this country to go, what means the most to you and your family. And it's very simple, in a sense, to do. I just think all of this other analyzing of the subtle nuances and who stepped left and who stepped right and whose eyes were facing the wrong way, it has nothing to do with the reality of this situation. I'm just kind of disappointed that I'm not hearing in any media outlet just truly about the fact that people need to vote on issues. And I'm sorry to sound so passionate, but I am.
That's okay. No, it's fine. I'm glad you called him, Gabriel.
Yeah, but
Faraji?
She's correct.
Yeah, she absolutely is correct.
She's correct.
And I think that this was an issue that came up when the conventions were going on. People had criticized the DNC, saying it's too elaborate, it's too Hollywood, it's too celebrity-like. And the Republicans said, well, we're going to tone it down a little bit. And I think that that's just one element of American politics because, quote unquote, if we look at how people are attracted to this, this has become from not just a campaign about the American presidency. This is about a popularity contest in some respect. This is about who can get more face time in the media, who can be seen on more cover. So this is the American political system. This is a part of it. It's an ugly part of it because she's right. We're not able to really spend and focus on the issues, but it is a part of it. However, I would encourage folks to not look at those things and see how Barack or Senator McCain walks and talks and things. Listen to what they're saying, because at the same time, these other elements can serve as smoke screens for what's really being said and done.
Well, and one of the issues that is continuing to develop is that a lot of the focus and approach towards commentary and the campaign has been by the Eastern elite media establishment. And to a certain extent, I'm sort of surprised by my colleague's comments when you suggested that perhaps Governor Palin is not speaking to a great majority of the American public out there, because that is a typical elitist Eastern establishment point of view. And in the long run, as I was saying earlier in the green room when we were talking about this, whichever candidate wins, the old dinosaur Eastern elite media establishment loses, because they have become increasingly disqualified and disenfranchised and alienated most of the American public about this campaign. It is about issues, and I think we're going to see the race tighten as we
but
get towards...
You talk about the elite media, but I think the issue is more than the elite media, and I think people, and I don't mean what that means anymore. I mean,
elite media, the Katie Couric's and the Charles Gibson's and the New York Times and
isn't there a thin line between saying that the media is elite or between that and looking at, okay, who is this candidate really?
Now, I think increasingly folks are getting their information about, I mean, if you look at 1962 is when
what's an example of what the New York Times or anybody else has done that has not been true?
Well, say, for example, the lack of critical examination of the candidates and some of the background issues. The New York Times ran an article quite some time ago that, well, maybe perhaps McCain had an affair, but it happened a long time ago. But then again, maybe he didn't have an affair. That was irresponsible. That was drivel.
I read the New York Times every day. I read it the Washington Post. I read the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, I'm sorry. How come you're so informed if you read the New York Times?
Because I choose not to watch Fox 45, which has no news. But I mean, it's...
No, I think what you need to do is you need to read the New York Times, you need to read the blogs, you need to watch Fox News,
you need to listen
to radio. But if you get a majority of your news from the New York Times, you're going to get a skewed, nuanced point of view as to where it is that we are as a country today.
One of the last papers is any investigative journalism at all, unlike the Sun. But when the issue is... Then I comment on this.
In the interest of full disclosure, I work for Tribune, which owns the Baltimore Sun, so I need to be a little careful. I'd like to have a job tomorrow.
When Sarah Palin says things like, talking about Barack Obama, sees America, it seems, as being so imperfect that he's palling around with terrorists who would target their own country. Now,
and she's not qualified. First, she shouldn't. That was totally out of her range. She's not qualified to say that. She has no knowledge about what he has done or the issues. I mean, look, we can't go into other countries. And I'm sorry that I know that some people really feel like, well, you know, I'm feeling that type of policy. But if this is a modern day society, these are governmental nations. We can't go and just have this type of relationship where we're going to just bomb other countries and do what we want
to
do.
I'm going to go to the phones here, but Kevin, you can come to this. One of the things that frightened me the most when I heard her say that was what happened when you heard what the crowd did. When she said that line, she does over and over again, this is in Florida.
Well, I don't...
You heard people in the crowd yelling, kill him. Right. And then you heard people in the crowd throwing out racial epithets, using the N-word, back at her.
What does that say
to you about what's being riled up?
But here it is again. We've got three folks who are together, who arguably know the issues, know the background, know the facts, and what it is that we're talking about. I mean, we're talking about something that is despicable. What we should really be talking about is who has a plan for energy independence, who has a plan for the economy,
but the scary thing is that...
Those comments at that rally were no more responsible than what you read on the Daily Kos or what you read on the Huffington Post. I just don't buy it. You can find examples. Oh, I have. I have. You can read examples of extremists on both sides, and I don't think that's what's going to decide the election. I think as we get closer to November 4th, well, people are going to
We're
going to
take a short break and come back to Sheldon in Pikesville, Reverend Doc Key in Baltimore, Russ in East Baltimore. But when we come right back, we're going to play clips on just what he was asking for, environment and energy. We'll talk about that when we return. Talking about the election, the debate, the issues facing us with Faraji Muhammad, host of Listen Up Baltimore, which airs here on WEA Friday night at 7 p.m. He's also the founder and president of the New Light Leadership Coalition. Kevin Dayhoff is the former mayor of Westminster, Maryland, a blogger who works, you can read all of his blogs at kevindayhoff.net, kevindayhoff.net. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Before we go to Sheldon, let us hear some clips from last night's debate. We talked about issues. Let's bring one of the issues up, environment and energy. The first one, I think, is Republican nominee John McCain saying he has a strong record on the environment and global warming.
I have disagreed strongly with the Bush administration on this issue. I traveled all over the world looking at the effects of greenhouse gas emissions.
And our next quote is from Democratic presidential nominee Barack Obama, who says John McCain has voted 23 times against alternative fuels.
Senator McCain and I actually agree on something. He said a while back that the big problem with energy is that for 30 years, politicians in Washington haven't done anything. What Senator McCain doesn't mention is he's been there 26 of them.
I think if there is... there are a number of clear issues here. We're going to go to taxes and health care in a minute, some quotes, but that... Energy policy, there's a vast difference between the Republican position and the Democratic Party position. Faraji, Kevin?
Well, I'm not sure about that. It would seem that Barack Obama has been consistently against tapping into our resources here in this country. He talks a good game about nuclear energy, but he keeps bringing up he's been consistently against the nuclear disposal site out in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
I think the playing these tapes back. I mean, you do a good Tim Russert routine. Let's go to tape. But I just don't think. I think when most Americans listen to the debate and listen to this back and forth about who voted for what,
we're not talking about issues, so I'm trying to raise some issues here. And you're
think it means anything. What it is that we need to do is we need to look at who it is that's going to have a clear energy independence policy for us in the future. And this is where it is. I'm extraordinarily disappointed with what it is that Governor Palin is talking about these days, because clearly of the three presidential, vice presidential candidates, she knows her stuff when it comes to discussing energy independence.
I just can't agree with that. I mean, we're seeing, and I heard Senator Barack Obama made the point that he said that nuclear and those alternatives and that option in general is just a part of the larger conversation in dealing with energy independence. You know, he said that his first priority, when Tom Brokaw asked him the question, what would be your first priority out of energy, entitlement, and healthcare reform, he said energy. He said it's going to take us a few years. He already said that it's going to take us about a good 10 years to really get to the point where we need to be. Whereas McCain said he would do all three at the same time. And so that leads me to believe, well, how are you going to do this? How are you going to focus on energy, entitlement, healthcare? How are you going to do this with the lack of resources, the lack of money that this country has? It just seems such like so ambitious that it's almost improbable that he's even going to get any of this stuff done. So what I hear from Senator Barack is saying that he's going to move things forward, but he is also saying that this is not going to be an overnight process. This is going to take some real time.
But what what it is I'm concerned about with Senator Barack Obama is that he sticks his finger in the wind and he sees which way it's blowing and that he's going to say anything in order to be president.
I think you're doing exactly what you said we shouldn't be doing, which is not talking about issues. I mean, it's clear that there is a difference between the Republican Party saying we need to drill.
Part of the problem with the debate last night is that
the Republicans are saying we need to drill as a first priority in America, and the Democrats saying that's not the first priority. First priority is alternative energy. But there's a very clear different paths about which both parties want to take as their priorities in energy policy in America. I mean, I think that there is a very clear difference between the two.
Yeah.
You can believe in one or the other, but there's very clear differences. Well, let's see what listeners think at 410-319-8888. Sheldon, you've been holding on for a while. You're on the air. Sheldon, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'd like to say a word about the race factor. There was a very interesting article the other day in that East Coast elite newspaper, the New York Times. It turns out that there's some very good research out that suggests that the Bradley effect has been completely discredited. The Bradley effect is the phenomenon whereby whites say they will vote for black candidates and then they don't. In point of fact, in recent elections, black candidates have outperformed their polling predictions among white voters pretty consistently across the board. That's not to say there isn't racism in voting. What it is to say is that except in races where the two candidates are indistinguishable other than by race, a white candidate who's motivated by race will simply tell you who they're voting for. In this election, they'll say, I'm voting for McCain. It doesn't eliminate race as a factor, but what it does mean is you can pretty much rely on the polls. If a white is telling you he will vote for Obama or she will vote for Obama, the odds are that he will. And on the New York Times website, this was either yesterday or the day before, they have links to the studies, and I've read them, and they're pretty convincing. The Bradley effect is a myth. It doesn't exist anymore.
Well, we'll see that on Election Day. I think that the interesting articles in the New York Times over the weekend were talking about the complexity of race in this election, talking about how race is a subtle part of the American consciousness because of racism and slavery.
Right.
And it's really a hard thing to put your hands around, much harder than it was in 1963 when segregation existed and the KKK was still alive in a major, and people were being lynched and killed. So America's in a different place. And so race is a very difficult thing to deal with. And I think that if Obama is elected president of the United States, the conversation on race is going to be a very different place.
Absolutely.
We'll see what happens, if that happens. Let's see what happens back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Reverend Doc Key, you've been holding on for a while. You're on the air.
Hey, brother. How you doing?
Good, Reverend. How are you?
Good, good. I just wanted to, first of all, thank you for having this discussion. And the material, I'm glad it's coming from Morgan State University.
Me too.
Where we've had all kinds of critical historians and political analysts who have been there. Some have been my teachers. One of the things I wanted to raise is that Dr. W. Du Bois said the problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line. Race matters, you know, whether or not we want to be superficial, intellectual, whatever. Race is an integral part of the soul and the body politic and economics of America. And as we look at this contemporary campaign with Obama and McCain, I think we have to look at the continuum. When Jesse Jackson, in 1988, he almost clinched the Democratic nomination coming out of Illinois. Simon, the U.S. senator there, supported him. He came into New York, and all he had to do was do well. And with the Southern Leadership Roundtable, we're talking about inside the Beltway Easterners, what the Southern Leadership Roundtable did, that's Bill Clinton and Al Gore, who was a presidential candidate at the time, they took money and they bought Ed Koch, the past mayor of New York, out of retirement, gave him money, and he pulled the Hymetown remark that Jesse had referred to in 84. And that all but derailed Jesse's nomination. When he came out of Illinois, they was meeting in the hotels about who would be vice president on Jesse's ticket. I say that to say, Harold Washington Jr. led in the polls tremendously when he was running for U.S. Senate out of Tennessee. And what happened was they created all these media spins and commercials with white girls on the phone saying, Harold, call me.
Harold Ford,
Harold Ford. Who did I say? Harold Ford Jr. is what I'm talking about.
Right.
All right. What I'm saying is that type of racism and that type of media spinning, Willie Horton and other elements like that, impact elections. And so I would hope that as we talk about what Obama's going to do or not going to do, what the media here or there is going to do, what issues are relevant or not, we also remember, and I'm through, that there are congressional elections going on also. And so when we talk about what's going on in the 7th Congressional District or the 3rd Congressional District in Baltimore City, you know, and what's the impact of all these policies that are gentrifying this city, I hope we address that also as we talk about what the national policy is. So thank you for listening to me, and I hope we continue to put these discussions in historical context and not just pull them out of the air, as I'm sure you're not trying to do.
Jackie DePauw, it's always wonderful to hear from you.
Yeah,
thank you so much
call.
For joining us. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Abu in Laurel, Maryland. Abu, you're on the air.
Mark, good to hear your voice. Good to hear Sheldon's voice. And I think I know that last caller, too. I just want to suggest that to Kevin that I detect a little bit of cynicism and a kind of like going holier than thou, really, because, I mean, there's a significant sector in this country for whom the issue of access to public lands, so you can ride your snowmobile or hunt, is a key issue. And yeah, they don't read the Times. But my point is that demographic is not what it was 40 years ago. Okay? That's the first point. The second point is that people in other parts of the country aren't necessarily relying on the New York Times for their news. This idea that there's this monolithic, elitist Eastern press that's riding roughshod on public opinion, by and large. I mean, that's kind of a dated formulation. People are getting their news from too many different sources. The New York Times and other newspapers, partly because of financial pressures, don't really represent what they did before in journalism. So, I don't know. I would just appreciate you being a little more granular about some of this stuff, because it's not... what you're depicting is a reality that does not correspond to this election. I'm sorry. Thanks.
Abu, thanks so much, and it's great to know we're here on the air and also... bringing in our listeners from the D.C. area as well as the Baltimore area. It's
but he brought out good points. He's correct, because I don't believe that the Katie Couric's or the Charles Gibson's or the New York Times of the world is going to be the final arbiter of this contest. I think that there are far too many places for folks to get information these days, and I think as we get closer to the election, folks are going to be... seriously examine what the positions are of Senator Barack Obama and Senator McCain. And I believe that as the election gets closer, we're going to look past the rhetoric that's being put out, the feel-good populism that's being put out as to that we're going to tax our way into prosperity.
Speaking of taxes, let's go to taxes for a minute here. Before we go back to the phones at 410-319-8888 and to Truman, Kimberly, and David, in that order, our next three callers. So hang on, Truman. We're going to hear what you have to say about energy and drilling. I'm curious to see what you have to say. But let's play these clips about taxes from last night's debate and talk about another area where I think that there's a real clear difference between these two tickets, the Democrats and Republicans, on the future of the nation. So let's roll. This first one is Democratic presidential nominee Barack Obama says the government will have to limit spending and denies that he plans to raise taxes.
We're going to have to make some investments, but we've also got to make spending cuts. And what I've proposed, you'll hear Senator McCain say, well, he's proposing a whole bunch of new spending, but actually I am cutting more than I'm spending.
And in response, we have Senator McCain, who says Barack Obama hasn't been very clear about taxes.
Nailing down Senator Obama's various tax proposals is like nailing Jell-O to the wall. There's been five or six of them, and if you wait long enough, there'll probably be another one. But he wants to raise taxes.
Now, gentlemen, you can weigh in here on taxes and the Republican sense and the Democratic sense of where we have to go with taxes in America. And, I mean, when I look at what both websites say about their platforms, I mean, and what people have written about it, I mean, it's clear that I think Obama is saying he's going to reduce taxes for majority of middle-class Americans, and that what Senator McCain wants to do is leave taxes pretty much where they are or drop them for the very wealthy and for the rest. And so there's a real difference in terms of the role of taxes and how we should pay taxes in America. And I think there's a clear difference here of these two candidates.
Absolutely. I mean, the difference is, one, it's for the middle class. With Senator Barack Obama, he's talking about 95% of the middle class. He said that those who are making, I think, if last time it was $200,000 or less, would get some type of tax cut. And then for Senator McCain, it's still kind of the business as usual, where he's talking about he's going to get tax break to the wealthy and those who are making over. I don't remember if he ever gave a number, but he just said for those who are making a significant amount of money. Barack Obama is talking about a $1,000 stimulus package that he wants to send out to all Americans. And I'm thinking that the taxes is going to be, and I have to agree with you here, Kevin. I mean, we can't just tax away whether we increase or decrease. But what people are looking for is some type of assurance that the government is not taking their money and just using it as they will. We're in the middle of a financial crisis. You're talking about people spending or using their taxes towards the $700 billion recovery plan. And yet people aren't seeing the incentive or aren't seeing the benefit of investing in that plan. And when I go into barbershops, people are asking me, well, if I'm giving up so much amount of money, $2,500 here, am I going to get that return on my, can I write that off as a tax return? Can I get that back? And the question is no. I mean, we're just going to take the money and then just move on as if nothing has ever happened. And I think that that's the problem, is that all this money is being taken out of the homes of the American people, going into government, and then that's where the doors are closed, that's where the talk gets muddled, and that's where people lose money.
Kevin, you have a thought on this before we go back to the phones?
And I think that the cynicism of the American public when anyone brings up the concept of taxes, I think Senator Barack Obama can talk about the fact that he's going to reduce taxes for 95% of the middle class. I think he can say that to the cows come home. The challenge is that he utters the word taxes. And I think at a time when the American public has lost full faith, trust, and confidence in the ability of the United States government to do anything well with any capability or competence or to have any integrity with what it is that they say. As soon as Barack Obama says taxes, people are going to say, I've just had far too many experiences about candidates promising that sort of thing, and our taxes continue to rise. The gasoline continues to increase. Healthcare continues to be inaccessible or financially out of reach. And I'm worried about whether or not I'm going to have a job tomorrow. And then when you reach the more intelligent voter who understands that it's capital formation that creates jobs, you lose even a larger percent of the population. If you stop and look at Dun & Bradstreet's average business ratios, and the average self-employed person is keeping maybe 10 cents out of every dollar they bring in, a person who's making $250,000 a year is only keeping about $25,000. The problem is that there are too many small business owners out there in the world who are going to get hammered by taxing the rich. Well, 80% of the taxes are already paid by the top 20% of the population already. It just doesn't wash. When it comes to economics, Obama is a walking disaster.
I'm not so sure that I mean, I think you fudged a lot of facts there. I mean, I think, and kind of convoluted a lot of things.
That's
quite.
And you can go. Well, what did I fudge? Go. What are you technically uncomfortable with?
Well, I mean, it's. It just seems like you're saying that because there's some conversation about taxes, it's sickening after a while, because you have to look at the bigger picture here, that this country is in the financial crisis that it's in because there have been so many changes and loopholes in the tax code. There have been so many loopholes in how money is used and accounted for, that people, I think a lot of people are confused. I think a lot of people just don't know how this whole process works. And I think that what politicians and both Republican and Democrat, but I've seen a lot on the Republican Republican side is that the tax thing, it seems to be the number one priority. I will lower taxes.
Now, I think the number one priority, the number one concern of the American public is the fact that Congress continues to spend money like there is absolutely no tomorrow. I don't know
I wonder if people would worry about the money being spent if the money was being spent.
$1 billion to bail out a bunch of fat cat bankers. But this doesn't make any sense to me.
We can't get into that issue completely right now. We don't have much time, but I think it's a much more complex issue than just bailing out fat cat bankers. I mean,
where is the money going to come from?
When you look at places like Wachovia and Bear Stearns and
Washington Mutual and
all this going down, the stockholders AIG. In those companies and the employees are the ones that were affected. They've lost their jobs, people have lost their pensions, people have lost money in those banks.
That's right.
And that has to be dealt with and taken care
of. That's right. And those people have to be, and you know what, Mark, the real question is there has to be some accountability. And I mean, and we folks act as if this whole financial crisis just popped up overnight. This is something that has compounded over time.
Well, let me get back to these calls. We've been calling in like crazy to get in here. 410-319-8888. Truman, you're on the air.
Sir, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Truman.
Good afternoon.
Very good to hear. Good conversation going on. My thing is that I've pretty much lost faith in the electorate of the United States. People, especially the Republicans, they seem to vote against their interests and lockstep with the party line for whatever reason. And I mean, Kerry, Bush shouldn't even been close, and certainly this election shouldn't be close. But what I called about, sir, is that I keep hearing people say drill, especially on the Republican side, and even Democrats are kind of folding into drilling. What they don't say, or what I don't hear, is who's got the equipment, who's got the technology and the knowledge to drill. It's the same big oil companies that are out there making record profits as it is. So you allow them to drill as they want to say, drill, baby, drill. And guess what? They're going to sell it on the open market, and China's absorbing more than they have in history. So therefore, the cost is not going to go down to the American public. I mean, so I don't get it. It's not going to be the United States government drilling. It's going to be some private oil company, which is the oil companies that we constantly deal with. So I really don't get it. I just think...
Well, I think if you look at it, that 3% of the world's oil reserves are in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Only 3%.
Right.
And by most estimates, even the industry's estimates, it would take 10 to 15 years if they started drilling today to get that oil to have any effect on anybody. But that most people say that oil would be sold to Asia and not come here. It was sold to Latin America or sold to other places that need it. So it's unclear who would get that oil, even if it was tapped here in the United States of America. 410-319-8888. Tina and Randallstown, you're on the air.
It's unclear who would get the oil.
Tina, you there?
Here in the United States of America. 410-319-8888.
Oh, she's got a radio on.
Tina, are you there?
Hi.
Hi,
thanks. Yes, I am.
Yeah, turn down your radio, please, Tina. Thanks.
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just have a comment. I work in the mortgage industry. And I know this is a mess that we have. But, you know, I listen to people and they're blaming the Republicans for this mess. Are the Republicans totally to blame? Aren't the Democrats sitting there as well? Mm-hmm. And also, I'm an African-American woman, and I have not decided who I am going to vote for. I have, you know, and I traditionally vote Democratic. But I have not decided in this election yet.
And what issues are the ones you're deciding upon?
Well, I'm looking at this financial mess that we're in, and I need to know who is really the blame. Is it the Democrats and the Republicans?
Are you trying to answer that question, Tina, or
asking that question? I need to know. I need to understand clearly.
Well, I think
who is the blame?
She's looking at past performance as a predictor of a future performance.
One of the things that I would say to you about that, I mean, is that there's a lot of information out there.
Right.
And I think that on our website, steinershow.org, you can hear a lot of interviews and read a lot about all the different opinions about how that happened. But it's clear it's come from all parties and all the above.
Absolutely.
I mean, it started.
And it's been happening
since 1977. It started with Lyndon Baines Johnson when he began to deregulate Fannie Mae so he could pay for the Vietnam War. And Fannie Mae fell apart because Fannie Mae's job originally was to make sure that mortgages were safe, banks could pay them, and they were done with a proper interest rate. And that was torn asunder. That regulation went over. Then Reagan started blowing up regulations and banking in America. And then you saw the Graham-Belau bill that came under Clinton. Clinton signed it, which completely destroyed Glass-Steagall, which was Roosevelt's bill that kept banks and finance industry apart and allowed them to mingle. And then we saw this kind of commingling of loans being sold across the globe.
So this is a policy that has continued from president to president.
President to president.
And they can't. And I think that if that's the answer, I would encourage Tina to definitely do some research to look at it. But I don't think it's, you know, it's funny because part of me feels like, well, this whole thing, well, I'm still undecided. These men have two different platforms to stand on. These men have two different platforms. So at this point, we have to just go ahead and make a decision.
Gentlemen, let me say for Farajah Muhammad and Kevin Dayhoff, it's been a pleasure to have you both in the studio. We'll come back and do this again before Election Day. Thank you both so much. And thank you all for calling in and writing in and making this show possible. Let me say WEAA is in need of volunteers for our upcoming fall membership drive beginning October 18th through October 26th. If you have an hour or two to volunteer for the show or any other WEAA program, call Norvell Jackson in our membership department at 443-885-2075. And WEA reminds you to exercise your right to vote during this historic election year. The Maryland deadline to register is Tuesday, October 14th. Call 410-269-2840 for more information. Register to vote. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're engineered and directed by Zachary Coleman. Our intern is Judith Lloyd. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To podcast this and all of our other shows, go to our website at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.